It's time for Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3. Brought to you by the Hippocrates Health Institute in West Palm Beach. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org. Now here are the hosts of Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates, Anna Maria and Brian Clement.
This is Health, Happiness, and Healing with Anna Maria.
And Brian Clement, Hippocrates Wellness. It's so nice always to rejoin our worldwide audience and bring you people who are on the cutting edge of where we are moving in the future, and also talking about the concerns and problems we have today. And today we have such an individual on who's right there at the spear tip, as we call it. He's teaching at Harvard Medical School and has been there for almost two decades. And the institute that Anna Marie and I brought down from Boston, it resided in there from 56 until 1987. And here we are in West Palm now. Know the standards of medicine in Massachusetts. They're incredibly high standards. If you go around the rest of the country, it looks like second-rate stuff always. And his colleagues and peers, which are the most scrutinizing group of people I've ever been around in my life in medicine, actually has voted him one of the best family practitioners. So what do you say about that, Dr. Abramson?
Well, thank you for a kind introduction. I was teaching at Harvard. I taught for about 25 years, but I stepped down about a year ago.
Oh,
just to keep the record straight.
Okay. After 25 years, you had enough of the students. You just said, what happened then after that time?
Well, no, it's an important question. I didn't have enough of the students. I had enough of the miseducation of the students.
Yeah.
And the watching the students getting socialized into a way of thinking about medicine that was not going to produce the best health, but was going to produce the best profits for the biotech industries.
Pretty sad, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I think the key is, I've spent about now 20 years looking critically at what pharma is doing. I was a family doc for 20 years. And then hit down a research fellowship before I went into practice. And in the late 90s and early 2000s, it was just clear that the journals were going off the rails and that they were increasingly controlled by the drug industries.
Yeah.
And it's become just such a crisis. The magnitude of the crisis is unfathomable.
Yeah.
Last year, in 2021, 1.1 million Americans died in excess of the death rates in the other wealthy countries. 1.1 million Americans. That's like a 9/11 every single day.
Yeah.
Every day. And we can't get the news out, and people don't understand this, and we're spending $2 trillion a year extra compared to the other wealthy nations whose death rate is,
as we know,
we're
two times more money. It's a number three killer in the United States now, the current practice of pharmaceutical medicine. And we saw something that, you know, I actually cried through it just a couple of weeks ago. And it was an interview with a youngster, a young doctor up at Northwestern, so he wasn't a slouch. And this guy was so articulate and so clear, it just touched my heart. And it was on PBS, so there was intelligent interviewing going on. And the interviewer's sister was a physician, a practicing physician. And led into, why did we lose in the year 2021, 17,500 medical doctors? They quit. And why now, when they polled doctors all over the country, samplings from 50 states, is 20% of the doctors planning on leaving in the next 2 years? That is catastrophic. And she said, is this because of burnout? And I listened astutely, and the guy gave the right answer. He said, this is incredible disappointment on our part. He said, we didn't go to school for this. And you're saying it, Dr. Abramson. Why do you think that happened? Why do you think that basically the Rockefeller approach to medicine got so greedy and so out of control that literally no longer is research valid in most cases? Are doctors permitted to practice medicine with the 12-year education they force you to have? And why patients are dying from the practice of modern medicine?
Yeah. Well, I think that there are two different causes. I think one is that our delivery system is becoming increasingly commercialized, whether it's through profit or not-for-profit organizations, and now extremely commercialized with the entrance of private equity into owning medical practices, emergency room services, and now private equity is even coming into clinical trials. So on the one hand, we have a delivery system that's oriented towards productivity and not towards meeting people with the care and the listening and the relationships that they need to optimize their health. So our delivery system is profit-focused. But the real issue and the unspoken issue and the secret issue is what I learned in my maybe 12 years as an expert in pharmaceutical, national pharmaceutical litigation, is that the knowledge, and I'm making air quotes, but it's hard to see on the radio, the audio, the knowledge that doctors are trained to believe and trained that they must practice by following the dictates of evidence-based medicine. That knowledge is now produced and disseminated for its profit value, not its health value. So we've got virtually a complete market failure where the research agenda is so determined by profit, by the market, by corporations that want to maximize their profits, so that 96% of the research, medical research that's done, is about new drugs and devices, and only 4% of the research that's done is about how to help Americans to be as healthy as the citizens of the other wealthy countries, and how to deliver healthcare efficiently. So that's what these doctors, and that's what I was referring to about the Harvard medical students, the doctors learn that they've got to practice evidence-based medicine, and the evidence is about the things that are going to be most profitable, and also the evidence, the scientific evidence, is not transparent. So that when peer-reviewed, we hear that an article was peer-reviewed and published in the New England Journal of Medicine or JAMA, and therefore it is trustworthy. You must trust it. You must practice consistent with it. The peer reviewers, and this is something that doctors don't understand, the peer reviewers don't get to see the actual data from the studies. The peer reviewers just get to see the data that's included in the manuscripts that are often produced and overseen by the commercial sponsors of the research.
So they can't even edit what they have done and spent many times years to do in the research labs and in classic practice, et cetera. That's insane. I mean, so basically somebody else writes the article for them after they've done the work.
Yeah.
So in 1991, 80% of research was done in academic medical centers, and the researchers had a lot of influence in the design of the studies and the analysis of studies and the publication studies. But between 1991 and 2004, the number plummeted from 80% done in academic medical centers to 26% in academic medical centers. And the drug companies took the rest of that and paid private research companies to do the research. So the drug companies had control over that. But the 26% of the research that was left in the academic medical centers, one would hope, would have had the integrity that medical research used to have. But the academic medical centers had to make contracts with the drug companies that were as beneficial for the drug companies as giving the research to their private contractors. So it turned out that half of the research contracts that academic medical centers entered into, half of them give the company the right to write the article, and the authors, this was published in the New England Journal, the authors have the right to make suggestions about revision.
Oh, wow.
They actually put that in writing?
It's in writing.
That's
It's in writing. So half of the articles can be ghostwritten by the commercial sponsors using the academics' names as the authors, ghostwritten by the sponsors and not changed. The only recourse that the researchers have is to resign.
Well, here and around the world, the average American and the worldwide, they look at America, the Food and Drug Administration, as a shining light on the hill, would assume that they're overseeing this. So when we say FDA approved, tell us why we should be a little concerned about that.
Well, yeah, it's a complicated story. The short of it is that about 65% of the FDA's budget for overseeing human products is paid for by the drug industry. It's called the Prescription Drug User Fee Agreement. It started in 1992 under President Clinton.
And Fauci. Fauci was there at that point, yeah.
Fauci was in the NIH, but the Prescription Drug User Fee Agreement was money directly. The FDA was underfunded, and AIDS drugs were in the pipeline, and people with AIDS were dying in large numbers in the United States. Mm-hmm. And ACT UP was an activist group of AIDS activists, and they worked out that they were politically effective enough to force the government to do something about the bottleneck at the FDA of not approving effective drugs. And the deal that they came up with was that they would take money from the drug companies to put more money into the FDA so they could approve drugs more quickly.
Yeah, I remember this started with HIV in the 80s under the Reagan administration, and Dan Quayle, they put him in charge because he knew nothing from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much said, let's fast track drug research. So now I get it. When we come back, we're going to talk about this and why the smartest kids in the world that go to Harvard University are being taught to write prescriptions rather than practice healthcare. We'll be right back.
How are you feeling? Wellness awaits you right here in West Palm Beach. Hippocrates Wellness Institute has been transforming lives for over 50 years. Located on 60 lush acres, the Hippocrates Wellness Institute can reverse chronic disease, help you lose weight, increase your longevity and immunity. Call for your consultation and tour today, 561-471-8876. That's 561-471-8876 for Hippocrates Wellness Institute. Now back to health, happiness, and healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org. Now here are the hosts of Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates, Anna Maria and Brian Clement.
This is Health, Happiness, and Healing with Brian
and Anna Maria Clement at Hippocrates Wellness. And today we're here with Dr. John Abramson, and this is an amazing researcher who taught at Harvard for 25 years and done so much research about big pharma. And, you know, what most people, I think, what goes over our head, because all the social papers, you know, they get the headline from research, which really is mainly what drug companies are telling the researchers to be. Only 4% is getting into real healthcare. So, Dr. John, that must have really hurt you because you are into healthcare.
Absolutely. I mean, I went into family medicine because I believed that the relationships between doctors and patients are a key element of the healing process and they should be a key element of medicine. But because the research is so driven by the pharmaceutical and medical device industry, that those kinds of relationships are now dismissed, they're low priority, and there's this positivist attitude that if you just quickly get to the right medicine to prescribe, you'll be being a good doctor and you'll be helping your patients as much as you can. And it's so far from the truth. I wrote Sickening, was published about 2 years ago. Sickening, after serving as an expert in national pharmaceutical litigation for 10 or 12 years, where I actually had access to the pharmaceutical company's computers, to their hard drives. Mm. And was in the rare position of being able to figure out what really happened. I had to sign confidentiality agreements, so most of what I learned I can't tell, but some I can, and I put that in my book, Sickening. And it's just unbelievable how much doctors put stock in the information that they get and translate that information into their pattern of medical practice, not knowing that the science has not been transparent, that the peer reviewers didn't have access to the data, and the guidelines don't have access to the data, and our entire system is driven towards taking as much money as can be taken out of American society and putting it in the hands of wealthy investors instead of making Americans as healthy and given the opportunity to live the best life possible.
Right.
And it's just tragic.
Let's try to do a deep dive for our listeners into this, because I remember in the New England Journal of Medicine, there was a very brave guy who was at Harvard at that point, 42, 43 years ago, the Eisman. And he did a study. He polled Americans across the socioeconomic sphere. And back then, more than half of them chose not to take allopathic health care. So this was a big red flag. And I watched what happened within just a handful of months. The major shareholders of the insurance companies became who? The pharmaceuticals. And so tell me why. This is where, you know, I understand this, but let's talk to the audience. How can a woman and a man who goes 12 years to school, has the academic ability and intellect to do that, be conned in such an overwhelming way to practice medicine that's not working, and they see it's not working, and on a daily basis they go in and continue to do that? So what are your thoughts on this? This isn't a criticism. This is really a question so everyone can understand what your thoughts are. You trained for a quarter of a century some of the brightest people on the planet that came to Harvard. Why do these people go into practice and not wake up like you?
Yeah. So the key idea here is that the questions that you're asking are sociological questions, not medical scientific questions.
Yes, you're right.
And this was addressed in a book that was written in 1962 by Thomas Kuhn, who was a nuclear physicist at Princeton and then became a philosopher of science. And Kuhn's huge insight was that when there's expertise, scientific expertise, there are certain unwritten rules about what is legitimate knowledge and what is not legitimate knowledge. And it's unspoken. This information is transferred implicitly during training. But during training, in order to become eventually accepted into the inner circle of expertise, which doctors are, they've got to accept what the rules of legitimacy of knowledge are. And so they don't look critically at what those rules of legitimacy are. They just learn them. And then they learn what is deemed legitimate.
And on the street, that's called standard of practice. Am I not right? On the street, a doctor would say it's a standard of practice.
It's the intellectual infrastructure of the standard of practice.
Yes,
that's correct. And that's what students are taught. And that's what they must learn in order to become physicians.
Yeah.
Now, what they don't learn is that those standards of practice have been taken over by commercial interests.
Right.
And so that the research that's done, I know a lot about statins and heart disease and cholesterol.
Yeah.
And what we see is that the approach to preventing heart disease is about lowering your cholesterol and having fancy tests and all. And there's some benefit. I'm not saying nobody take statins, but maybe on another show we can take a deep dive into that. because there is some benefit. And the question each person must make for themselves is that enough benefit? But the point I'm making here is that our focus on cardiovascular disease prevention that has been taught to these Harvard students and all the other students in the United States is to focus on cholesterol levels and biomedical stuff, when 80% of the risk of heart disease is due to lifestyle issues,
right?
How we live our life, what we eat, how we exercise.
Epigenetics.
Epigenetics and just plain lifestyle, you know, not even a consequence of causing certain genetic tendencies to come forth. Just plain lifestyle. So the students are taught this reductionist view of of good medicine. That means that they should follow numbers and treat numbers and give medicines and see if the numbers are getting better. When the real action in preventing heart disease has to do with helping people, A, to make individual decisions about a healthy lifestyle, mm-hmm. and B, to approach it as a social problem, where much of the risk of heart disease is explained by social factors, communities that don't make exercise easy, mm-hmm. that don't have good food that's readily accessible.
Socioeconomics, yes.
We have a special program at the Institute called the Doctor Days, and that is a three-day program twice a year, and it's so well attended. And after the last day, Brian and I do a Q&A with everybody. They will say, how come we didn't learn this? How come we didn't learn lifestyle?
It's amazing. Our youngest son came to us a number of years ago and said, I want to go to medical school. He was on his track to become a PhD researcher. He's out in California. Now he's in Sweden at the top school there, Karolinska, who you're familiar with. And although the training is wildly different, because it's socialized medicine, so it's not all about profit, profit, profit. The similarity is too close for comfort. So, mm-hmm. things that you're saying, we see in our own family. Mm. Now, thank goodness our child's on track to come and take our role after a combined 106 years of doing this. But the fact, quite simply, is when you look at the young doctor we talked about, Eric Reinhardt, who actually poured his guts out, and when you look at people like my son, the good doctors and the out-of-the-box thinking doctors are not going to go into mainstream medicine, wouldn't you think so?
That's right. It's a tough battle. And it's very hard for young doctors to buck this overwhelming imperative to follow so-called evidence-based medicine, which means the bottom line of the abstract that's published in the medical journals. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for docs to go against that, and they're vulnerable to malpractice litigation if they're not following the guidelines. Mm-hmm. So it's a very tough road to hoe for young docs to practice consistent with the beliefs that you're talking about, which are going to provide so much more health than allopathic medicine, though occasionally we need allopathic medicine.
For sure.
Of course, there's a place. Holistic doesn't mean only natural. That's what people have to realize. Yep.
That's why we end up with all kinds of testing we didn't need, all kinds of medication we didn't need. Our guest sits mm-hmm. in front of us with, they have a book full of tests. They have all that medicine, and they're like, I don't want to be on it.
Canada, a routine part of an annual medical exam is called deprescribing, to go through all the medicines and figure out which ones can be stopped and which ones can be tapered and to see how people do.
Right.
In the United States, the word deprescribe, you can't.
It's the opposite.
No.
It's overprescribing. It's inverse.
Here's this, and
let's talk about that subject. Mm. I don't know. I've sat with, probably 200,000 to 300,000 people since 1970 and done consultations with them over here and in Europe when I ran centers. And the biggest concern I have is not that they've gone to a doctor, but they've gone to 10 doctors or 5 doctors who do not ask what meds the other doctors put them on.
Yep.
So, that is a frightening thing. Mm. And I can tell you, not a high percentage, but maybe 20% are actually ill from the combination of the medicines that nobody bothered to ask, are you taking it?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I wrote this book, Sickening, to try to get to doctors to understand that most of what they believe about good medicine has come to them because of its commercial value.
Yeah.
And it's a very hard message to get across. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Well, listen,
thank you.
The book Sickening, this is an easy book to get. So, this is not something that's hard. So tell the listeners how to get that. And by the way, why it's so important for them to read it, not only medical doctors. Sure, it would be great if we could almost force every medical doctor on the planet mm-hmm. to read it. They may wake up a bit. But they don't want to wake up because, as you pointed out, we can't breeze over this one, John, that they get sued. They'll lose their license if they step too far out, After 12 years and 10 years or 20 years of practice, they'll lose. And number two, they'll be sued if they go out of the standard of practice, which is standard of practice is a baloney word for you've got to prescribe and do certain surgeries. And if you fall out of that, you're not a good doctor. We're going to slap you on the hand at best and take your license away at worst. And by the way, you're going to be sued. And people don't realize that. So how do they get a hold of this book?
The book is easy to get. It's sold where books are sold. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the regular booksellers. And you can get it in paperback. You can get it on Kindle. You can have it read to you by a reader, not by me.
You have a good voice. You should have done it. I'm bored reading my own books. I know.
Yeah, no, the publisher said don't do it, but it was a mistake.
It was a mistake.
I mean,
it was a mistake. But anyway,
some of these people should have had people read it. Yeah, they don't sound very good.
Anyway, the key message here is that doctors don't understand what's going on, and it's very hard for them to become conscious of the commercial influence.
Yeah.
Sickening. So people need to help their doctors be better doctors.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Patients need to teach their doctors how to be better doctors. And that you will learn how to do from reading Sickening.
Good. That's
great.
The way to put it. And
wonderful.
I agree with you on that. So here's the last question we're going to ask. And this is an important one. Here you're in private practice. Did you have attractive women come in and tell you about the latest, greatest drug that you should be prescribing on an ongoing basis? Pharma reps. Do you have them?
I did, like anyone else. And I don't know how much time we have, but I have two stories. One is that I wouldn't see the drug reps. So that bothered them greatly.
Yeah.
So, and I wanted to do alternative medicine in my practice, but I didn't want to charge people for it because I wasn't sure it was going to be beneficial.
Right.
So one of the drug companies came up to me and said, look, we'll give you $1,500 a grant to bring alternative medicine providers into your practice and see how it works out. If you'll just meet with us three times. So I said, okay, I'll do it.
Mm.
So they came in and the first time and they said, there were three of them, and they said, we're here to tell you why you should prescribe Augmentin, which was a brand new drug at the time.
Yeah.
It's amoxicillin and clavulinic acid, very, very powerful medicine, a very useful medicine in the right circumstances.
Yeah.
But they came in and they said, this is why you should prescribe Augmentin for your patients with sinusitis. And I said, are you kidding me? You're saying with a straight face that I should treat my patients with that instead of amoxicillin? And they said, yeah. And I said, well,
why?
I'm not going to do it. And then they never came back.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You're a brave and a smart man.
Yeah.
Dr. John Abramson. And he wrote one of the most important books in the history of medicine. And I wish every doctor was mandated to read it, called Sickening. And you don't have to be a doctor to read this. As he pointed out, and I love your approach, John, is in a loving, caring way. Mm-hmm. Your poor doctor is on an island alone, lost, confused, and fearful. In a loving way, help them to become better doctors. Till next week, find ways in your own life to learn, to grow, to develop, and make sure you understand you're in control. Be well.
Thanks for listening to Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org.